Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. I'm really glad you're here. Thank you for showing up, and let's get right into it. My question for you is, what's the hurry? Where are you going? If you are going, are you rushing? Why do we hurry? Why do I feel the need to go quicker sometimes, and sometimes I feel like I can take my time? And what are the consequences if I go too fast? And I guess we can always go too slow. So, let's see here. I got a lot of driving tickets, which I guess is pretty on the nose, but I had quite a few speeding tickets when I was younger. I drove quite a bit when my son was born, and I was 19 years old when my son came into this world. And me and his mother were not together for all of it, basically. And when I started going up there, it was roughly a 2.5 hour drive, about 100 to 115 miles, I believe, one way. So there and back would be almost 300 miles. And I did that trip twice a week for a very long time. And as a consequence of having to spend so much time on the road, I became lax in my concerns for safety and how I was comporting myself behind the wheel. I got many driving tickets. Some of it was because I didn't have insurance for a period of time, and I didn't have proof of insurance, even though I did. And so they have a tendency of having you show up just to prove it. But one time I was coming in to Denver, which is, you know, a metropolitan area here in my state of Colorado. And I think the speed limit was probably 65. And I was going probably around 95 when the cop pulled me over, which was quite a few points immediately. And I didn't have any insurance at the time. And so I got reckless endangerment too. And so let's look at this situation. Was I in a hurry? Yes. Did I realize that I was rushing? Not necessarily. So it shows how what we have to contend with and what we do in life can mold our behaviors and our habits. And we can get into a lifestyle of hurry, which is what I think I was doing behind the wheel of the car in this situation, was that I had become so jaded to the activity that I would just put the car going as fast as I could, as fast as I felt comfortable being able to safely, you know, weave in and out of people. And I pretty much just put it in cruise control right at 95 or even above 100 a lot of times. And this was not very safe. This was dangerous. And I obviously had massive ramifications and consequences that I had to deal with because of these decisions to live hurried. You know, another situation where I feel that I hurried, especially in my youth and a lot of the times through college as well, was in the act of writing papers. I've always been very comfortable taking tests. If you give me especially a multiple choice, I rarely even have to study. But paper writing, because of its closeness and the fact that you have to be able to express yourself in your own voice, which that creative aspect of individuality has always made me uncomfortable because I wasn't very certain about how I wanted to express myself in the first place when I was writing papers. And so what this tended to do is that I would procrastinate. I wouldn't do my work. I'd have maybe a month or months to be able to work on some massive paper, and I'd procrastinate to like the last couple of days. And then because I had so little time, I'd have to be hurried while I'd be doing it. And honestly, I got good scores most of the time on most of my papers because I'm lucky and I know how to do that academic sort of stuff. But I was never very happy with what I was doing, and I always was very aware that I wasn't happy with the material that I was publishing when I was writing these very short papers. You know, when I would turn it in, you know, I'd almost have to forget about it because I was ashamed of it. And it's because I knew that I didn't give it the time it deserved, even if I was interested in the topic at all. And a lot of the times there was no interest holding it together. And I knew that that paper was a complete pile of shit. So taking the time in an unhurried way when it comes to making this piece, especially if it's an expression of you, you know, for instance, I've been working on a charcoal drawing for like 3 weeks now, and it sits on, it's on very nice canvas paper, but it sits atop my desk, and I may only spend 30 seconds on it in a day, and I might only put a couple marks on it when I'm walking by it or when I put my socks on if I happen to notice that it is there, and that's when I'll spend a little bit of time on it. But the entire production of this charcoal piece has had zero hurry. You know, that's kind of what it was been expressing to me, is I wanted to do something very slowly. And I don't even think I'm a quarter of the way through done with this piece. You know, often when we are leaving a place or we're heading towards a destination for arrival, this is the crunch point that I see, that I find myself hurrying most often. You know, set the scene. I've got 3 hours for me and Odin to get to, say, a movie or something, right? Or maybe he has therapy, or insert here, whatever activity. You know, 2 hours and 50 minutes of that whole time may not be spent hurrying, and may be spent in the act of living and waiting or doing what is not what is to be done. Yet in that 10 minutes from 2 hours and 50 minutes up to the 3 hour point when you leave the house is so much more stressful, or at least for me. And it seems like it bursts into a fireball right when you need to leave the house. And I'm not sure if I felt like this before I had children. It's a lot harder when you have to corral cats and get children together. But I'm sure you understand what I mean. A story I've told before, and I'm going to do it again, even though I told it recently. I think it was only two or three episodes back. So you might be familiar with this, but I still think it applies to this situation, even though this is adjacent to the other one. The episode I am alluding to is the conservation of energy episode, by the way. If you're interested, I have a lot of material in the backlog. It's all pseudo-related, but you know, we go in circles here. So I had this chef, his name was, we're going to name him Chef Ed for this situation. I might have even named him by name in the other one, so. But Chef Ed, me and him didn't get along necessarily the best. He had an abrasive character to be around, and he had a shitty way of talking to people. And so we had our differences. But we also had these containers, these to-go containers. And I know if you worked in the cooking industry or the hospitality industry in any way, there's a billion different types of to-go containers that you can choose from to package away your edibles for home. The one I'm talking about is kind of like a clamshell. It had a clear lid. And the top nestled into the bottom of the bowl, sort of. And you had to push it in just perfectly to be able to get it to snap into place, kind of like those portion cups, if you know what I'm talking about, if you've ever seen a 2 or a 4 ounce portion cup. But I'm struggling with it. And what happened is that because of my struggle with this device to get the students, because we worked at a college, to get the students' food into the box and get them away from me so I can get the next student fed. And what happened is I'd be in a hurry, because I'd be rushing because I knew that this box was a pain in my ass. And so I'm hurrying to get it closed, and I'm failing, and I'm losing my composure, and the person that I'm serving is watching me lose my composure while I'm hurrying to get them their shit that's not even being done because I'm not getting the top on. And What Chef Ed did is he just came over, and I can still remember the way that he carried himself to the day. He slowly and methodically, starting from one side to the next, he slowly closed it. And he might have spent 2 or 3 seconds doing it, but he accomplished it with no fighting with the moment or the stupid box, you know. And he just looked me in the eye and he walked away. And I got the message, you know, slow down. And maybe it's a little bit easier if you slow down. And so I do think that there are consequences that come from being in a state of hurry. You know, what kind of things happen when you hurry? You know, I think that it becomes much more likely to make mistakes. We make mistakes when we're hurrying because we're not spending time on details. And when we stop spending time on details, we end up cutting details. And when we cut corners, you know, the product itself is going to be a less quality of a product. And sometimes this can be even in an action. If we're making actions, the quality of our action within our life can even be lesser. From these mistakes, I think a lot of these mistakes are born just from this tendency to think that we can multitask. Which, do you really think you can multitask? I think maybe we can parallel task. And we can set up one motion on the left, and we can get something moving, and then we can stop paying attention to it and push something else. So I'm thinking of like an ice rink and a rock on an ice rink, whatever that sport was where they would push the rocks across the ice. I can't even think of it right now. But if you push it on the ice, as soon as you take contact off of it, it keeps going for a little bit. Does that make sense? So I think we have two rocks and we can push one and then stop paying attention to it, push the other one. And there's like this momentum that keeps gathering the old task. But when we put our attention back, the attention was still taken off of the task at hand. And I think both things that we're trying to do at the same time, both of them become lesser and are less efficiently accomplished, in my own opinion. So when we're hurrying, the brain or the thinking factor, the reasonable character within me decides to instill multitasking. Like, this will make it quicker. If I do this and this and this at the same time, everything is going to get done at the same time, which never happens because that's a lie. So I think the moral of the story is that the faster we go, the more likely it is that we're going to have mishaps. We're going to have less quality in our products and our actions. And we'll tend to multitask when single tasking, even if we single task in a linear fashion, one thing after the next, we do this, then this, then this. At least each thing we can know we put our full attention to instead of trying to have split minds. Why do we hurry in the first place? What makes me feel like I need to? And I distinguish two different sorts of pressures here that we must encounter and navigate and either use or succumb to. And these are outside and inner pressures. I've got a lot more outside pressures than inner pressures, but I'm going to do inner last. So some of the outside pressures that I could think of course, there's work pressures. We can have peer pressures from our work, and this is more of a societal need to get along or to be part of the group or to be liked. And whether or not we like it or not, when we're working with a team, it's a lot harder to work with a team that doesn't like us than that does like us. So even if we're not a pushover, we have to have a little bit of respect from the team to at least coexist. So there is a pressure in work to soothe our teammates and our peers. And of course, we have an administrative pressure that comes from management or leadership. It can be very tricky when you have leadership within the ranks of the team, which I think it's good. I think it is a very healthy thing for leadership to work among the people, you know, and I am the people. But to lord from within the people can be a very difficult situation for all involved. And this can create a lot more extra pressure that might not be necessary. And at work, this is sort of from the inner, but I think we have our own intrinsic self-motivating portions of ourselves that push us to do how we do at work as well. And these intrinsic pressures for doing it just because I want to do it and doing it because I like doing a good job versus doing it because my boss told me to, you know, there could be a wrestling of motives there. Because even if we want to do it initially because we want to do it for me, for you, for whatever reason, that can be diluted when somebody else tells us to do it. And all of a sudden we're like, oh, well, I wanted to do it, but now I don't feel like doing it because you told me to. And I know that's a petty ego trip, but it happens. I think it happens more often than not, most of the time, when people aren't attempting to communicate with them, with each other. Within outside pressures, I would also consider the time pressures of living to be sometimes debilitating, but we can learn how to strategize and plan our time appropriately. And I want to talk like more about time here in a second, but right now we're just talking about pressures. But if you're late and you haven't allowed enough time, whose fault is that? So I think most of the time that I'm late is because I didn't leave early enough. If you leave with a cushion, it's a lot harder to not have enough time. Does that make any sense? And I think that is also a struggle of many people who share a breed of my neuroses, where you end up showing up too early often. You know, I've showed up at a place like an hour early for an interview just because I was just so anxious about traffic being in the way, something happening, the world's out to get me, you know, but that's not the case. I don't believe that anymore. And if you've also set up a habit of being late, like I mentioned earlier, with my habitual driving making me jaded to the actions and my responsibilities as being a vehicle owner and motor vehicle operator. But if you're used to not giving yourself enough time, there's a many times in my life where I'll wake up and have 15 minutes to get to work. That's a recipe for disaster. You know, even if I know I can get dressed in 5 minutes and not eat, not get my coffee, not even take a piss or shave, you know, what if there is some sort of traffic incident or a car crash? Or what if your car doesn't start? What if it's too cold, your battery's dead, you have to chip off the ice off your windows, and that takes an extra 2 or 3 minutes, and that's 2 or 3 minutes later that you needed to be wherever you needed to be, you know? Like, a big portion of the reason that I'm always on time now is because of how I've set up my life and the routines that I have. I wake up way before I need to be where I need to be. You know, I always give myself at least 2 hours between waking and getting to my job. And I haven't been that great about it, honestly, lately. I think I give myself about an hour and 15 minutes. But it's still better than 15 minutes. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get up now at 5 and I leave at 6:15. You know, so that's enough time to shower, eat, and I'm still sitting around for a sizable portion of time. And I still leave, it's a 30-minute drive to get where I need to be, and I leave 45 minutes before I need to be there. So there's still 15 minutes of cushion for everything. And I always start my car 10 minutes before I have to leave, so the car's never going to fuck me. You know, well, sometimes it fucks me, but I have enough time to figure it out. I hate time. I really don't. I really don't like time. So we have a lot of inner pressures. You know, everybody has a different temperament on what and how they like to do things and how hard they want to work and how much pleasure they get out of working. And I'm using work very vaguely here. It doesn't necessarily have to be employment. This could be tasks at home, cleaning, all those sorts of things. You know, like any sort of effort. We all have a different relationship between effort and the pleasure from that effort. And I personally have found that I can supremely enjoy things that are very mundane just because I choose to, you know? And from having immense pleasure from doing very banal things, my being has become very happy with it, though. Our inner world and the outer expression of it can be affected by the pains that we have been through in the recent or the far-off past, which could include, you know, hardcore trauma. These things can affect how early we want to get up. You know, if we are in a state of pain and we don't feel rested when we wake up, we might choose to sleep in longer, or we might set the alarm a lot later. You know, I think a lot of the times that I wasn't giving myself a lot of time for self-care in the morning, you know, I was also drinking and I just didn't give a shit, you know, like I had no compassion towards myself. And it's because I was hurting, you know, and the lack of compassion was directly related to the pain that I felt inside. So just if you're out there and if you're hearing my words and you carry that pain inside you, you know, give yourself leniency and give yourself extra time to get shit done so that you don't have to hurry, because hurrying is a lot more difficult and it's just making the pain you already feel a little bit less tolerable. And, of course, our inner world is completely ruled by our desires, and our desires lead to habits which lead to the behaviors that soothe those habits to get what the desires want and need, or think they need. Need with very sarcastic square quotes. So the inner pressures tango with the outer pressures. And in the middle of that is that sense of you who can feel the tug. And in order to find comfort or to get out of the pressure's way, we think we have to hurry. And often I'm completely convinced that's what I have to do. Sometimes it feels like a very do or die almost situation where, you know, when I was working alone, I felt that when something would go wrong, you know, that's when I would find myself in a very hurried state where I would get very sweaty and I'd have really bad headaches and I'd get really tired. And it was just that go, go, go. And it's nice being able to have a team and lean on it now, because even though I see a lot of the hurry and the go, go around me, I can lean back and know that I'm going to take care of myself. And as a model of good behavior, the whole team slows a little bit to go with it. And it doesn't take away from the product, because what's funny is that when you stop hurrying, most of the time you get your product quicker than you thought you were going to, and the product is much more pretty. And if in the case of me is when I'm making food, it's much more tasty. It's much more appealing to look at too, when you take your time on something. What is time? This thing that I hate and that I'm constantly battling with and working around. The thing that I'm always considering the minute I wake up is, how am I going to spend my time? What am I doing right now? Which is all related to this sense of self and ego wrangling time and trying to figure out what to do with itself. You know, so I say itself, because desire doesn't necessarily have to be who you are. I think the time is a relationship to what we've decided about when we have to be somewhere, which obviously has a where, but the when is also tied to the how, because how you get to there is, yeah, it's, yeah, that was very confusing. Let's say that again. I think the time is a relationship to how we decide we're going to get somewhere, in what fashion and how and what time we're going to be there. But what if you didn't have to be somewhere? Would you consider time? Do you notice time when you don't have to be anywhere? in the middle of a vacation, are you thinking about time? In the middle of a weekend, when you're having a very good time, but when you're comfortable, when you're sated, when you're conscious in the moment, completely, do you think about time? Meditation has often been spoken about as to be a state of timelessness, or at least that's the goal in between the thought forms. There's supposed to be some state of timelessness. And I felt it where it can feel really good in some moments when you hit a good one, where an entire half hour or more, 45 minutes, an hour, can just fly. You know, and when things are awkward, it's not as easy to fly. And so, like, this week I tried meditating with my sister, which is just kind of weird. And, you know, I was very surprised that she said yes to do this with me, you know, because I'm weird and my everybody thinks I'm weird. But we sat, and I think it was only about 10 minutes. And I felt how the time was dragging for me, and it felt tense because I felt a lot of pressure to hold the space. And afterwards, I commented to her, I was like, sometimes it can feel like a while, huh? Did it feel like 10 minutes? And she was like, yeah, it felt like a while. But last time I did this, it was a lot quicker. Quicker, longer, same 10 minutes. You know, timeless. Maybe the pressure and the tension of the weirdness of that moment leads to more camera shots and more acknowledgement of the weirdness. Whereas you're in the state of beingness when time seems to go quicker. It's because we've let go of our grasp on the manipulation and the force that is required in surviving. But sometimes we can stop the survival role and just be. Sometimes time gets in the way of that. How much do we value time? You know, how do we value it? Are we valuing it as we should? The value that we put on a narcotic or a toxic poison, which for an addict could be a very, very, very high pedestal that damage has been placed upon. Is that a wise valuement? Now, I think time can be one of the worst poisons to anybody when misused. And what if the time has become toxic and shrouded in green and mist? Should it still be valued if it's a bad habit, an unhealthy thought form? A conflict that has been constructed but doesn't have any sort of reflection of reality. So let's consider the overvaluing of time. What is more important? How or what you are doing, or how much time it took? So a big thing in many service industries with any sort of tempo of allegro, where there's a beat that people need to get to, or you're going a little bit too slow. You got to walk fast enough to keep up, you know? But this pressure to get things done quickly, as mentioned several times in this podcast, what's more important? What you're doing, or how much time it takes to do it? Doesn't matter how big or small the it is that we're doing. And then undervaluing time. So it's your downtime, you're on a break, you're on a weekend. That lack of doing, whereas before we were talking about doing it, not it, but doing whatever it is, which might be it. But now we're talking about not doing, which is an important factor in life. We have to factor in not doing, or else we're going to do too much. So we can go too far in valuing that lack of time. And it becomes so important that we can shirk our duties. You know, I've been rather lazy on the past couple weekends, and I got caught off guard last Sunday, where it was my duty to clean the bathroom, and I completely forgot, and, you know, just kind of, it was a good weekend, but I didn't do a lot of work on things that I should have been doing because I was reading and, you know, spending time, which is all valuable as well, but the balance was off. And at the end of Sunday, where I had to work Monday, it was the end of Sunday. Sunday night, I had to go clean the bathroom because I forgot about it, because I was valuing my downtime more than my duties. So when we are overvaluing, can we hurry recklessly to accomplish a task to its detriment? And when we're undervaluing, can we hurry through important tasks for the sake of doing nothing? So here's how I link time back into the hurry again. Because we're hurrying recklessly to get something done on one side of this coin. And on the other, we're hurrying almost recklessly to get those same things done, but to do nothing. What would the middle way do? What would Aristotle say about measuring the mean of the situation? Can we notice the hurry? Notice the temperament? Notice the blood pressure? Notice how our thoughts respond to it? Can we simply look at what our outcomes are and decide if that's how we want to continue doing it? Do you like hurrying? Do you feel good if you hurry every day at work, or if you have to hurry to and from work? How does it make you feel? I don't feel good about hurrying, and I lived my life in a state of perpetual hurrying, where I was always hurrying. It never ended. And I got to the point where I was so raw that I would hurry out of bed in the morning. You know, I would hurry to brush my teeth, and then I would hurry back to the pillow when I'd get off work. And I was exhausted, and I was tired, and I didn't want to do it anymore like that. So lately, I've been making a lot of huge, I think they're monumentally huge, but I've been trying to make big changes in how I approach reality and my relationship with it, and with my son as a very important responsibility in my life. If not the most important responsibility in my life. You know, and everything I do in my own self-work dribbles down to him first, but I also think that all of our own individual self-work dribbles down into our groups, our peer groups, our familial groups, and even through them into people that we don't know. I think that say something nice and compassionate to somebody, and that compassion will bleed through them into the people that they know, like a virus. I believe that. So the things that I'm doing right now for myself when it comes to how I approach hurrying in life, you know, they come from a health standpoint and from a necessary standpoint, because this is the best thing that I could do. I think it's the best thing you can do is to work on yourself and however you want to do that. You know, none of this is advice. I don't think any of this is advice. So it's just the ramblings and the ruminations of a still very young human. But I digress. So firstly, I've been trying to maintain a comfortable yet able pace. That's the key word, a pace. So a pace is something that you hear about in relation to running often, because if you don't keep a good pace, you're going to fuck your knees and your feet up, and you're going to get tired. So sprinting is for some people, but if you're running for 6 miles, you can't sprint the whole way. You have to find a rhythm to get through it and to push it. And I think that we have to have a pace in life too. And I've had a very rickety, like where I'd be accelerating really fast and then hitting the brakes, acceleration, brakes, acceleration, brakes. And when I was younger, I was flexible and I could do that. But now I'm not as flexible as I used to. And one of the most important things that I can think to do is to set a pace. And as I mentioned before, one of the things I do is I try to meditate in the morning. I try to take it slow in the morning. And my way to take it slow and to be in a lack of hurry is to give myself ample time to be able to do the things that I need to do and to have time, a little bit of time to do nothing in the morning too. And this sets me off in an unhurried state. Whereas in my youth, I would be rushing immediately. And so I set the tone early in the day for rushing. Now I set the tone for slow. Yet not slow like a turtle. So you have to be able still. Within the word comfortable is comfort able. So we have to be able to deal with the trials and tribulations that are coming into today. And so just like within a distance running, we have to approach the day as this is going to be a day. This is going to be an endurance battle to some extent. What is the best pace I can set to get through my day? You know, on a weekend, I don't have to work. I might not have to do a lot of other stuff. Like I set my pace too slow this weekend, but you can go a lot slower on the weekend than on a Thursday when you're down a guy at work and you also have truck. And so you have a lot more extra duties. You got to work a little bit quicker and you got to run a little bit faster and harder and set the pace for the day. And like, just when I lost my house just a couple months ago, you know, my pace was ragged because I had to, but I was also knowledgeable and had very good self-care rituals in place to try to prop that up because I knew that my pace was so hectic, you know? So consider the pace that you're setting and consider the run that you have in front of you and try not to make it very jerky. Try to make it smooth. Especially if you're getting older. You know, I'm feeling older and I'm not even that old. So I can't even think where Anyways. And this pace is especially important when it comes to the consideration of an outside pressure. And I mean this completely selfishly, and I'm telling you to be selfish in this situation. If you've set a healthy pace for yourself, and something outside of you that doesn't directly influence your sanity or your sanctity. And I'm sorry, if you're at a job and somebody comes up and tells you to work faster, fuck them. You get to the point where you work faster for yourself or else the shit's going to be poor quality. You know, and I'm not telling you to tell your boss, fuck them. That's not what I'm saying. But if you're working hard enough, and so if you've set a good pace, you should be working as hard as you need to be in that situation, you know? And unless you're a lazy ass, if you're working fast enough, somebody who comes up and tells you to work faster, most of the time they're just being a jackass in my mind. I don't know. You can, if you disagree with me, please get on to my email address. My email address is very available at the bottom of the show notes. That's going to be thegingerbreadmansdialogues@gmail.com. If you are a lazy ass and you're not working fast enough, tell me your reasonings for why. Yeah, I don't know. But if you're a hard worker, you can also come and tell me how it feels when somebody doesn't appreciate your efforts and tells you to work faster when you're working as fast as physically possible for the job that is being asked. So there's two sides of the situation here, and I'm not trying to be an asshole. So, but that outside pressure can also be like not a boss and not like something that's confrontational or oppositional. It could just be a situation like, you know, thunderstorm, snowstorm, something that affects your transit if you have to work distances or have to commute to different cities, you know. All kinds of things can show up. And if something like the snow starts to hit the road, road starts to freeze, set your healthy pace, stick with the healthy pace. Don't shift up into gear just because you're late. See what I mean? So I've also been trying to respect my time and acknowledge how short a day a life really is. You know, life is short. Days are really short. They only feel long when we're bored, you know, but I think I'm trying to forget the word boredom. So if I'm living well, I think the boredom isn't even an issue. And I've been finding it hard to squeeze enough things into my day. And that's why I've been trying to squeeze in a whole bunch of nothings into my day too, because being too addicted to things, we can forget how sweet nothings can be. The nothing and the somethings are both part of my time. And starting off a day, realizing that I have a day and I can be grateful for it. And I'm so grateful for every breath that I wake up to, you know, and I can look at it and realize that I've got to do this day. And how can I do this day the best that I, I think there's something within all of us that has an element that is shared. And all of our time should be treated decently. And this is the respect I'm speaking about, you know? And so we all have that place and that ability to set our time as something that demands and deserves respect. And I don't think I've always done that. I think there's times, there was periods of my life where I didn't respect my time, and that's why I blew it up with substances and arguments and illusions, you know. So another thing that I've been trying to do along with having a good pace is respecting the time that, like, every single step that I put down can be important. Every step that you put down is important. And you should be proud of the efforts and the steps that you take. And always have plenty of cushion and buffer space so that you will not be late. If you have plenty of time, if you always set yourself up for success, you don't have to rush. And if you don't have to rush, you never have to hurry. And with less hurry, you can guarantee that you're making good shit. And as always, you have to give love to yourself and be compassionate towards your efforts and your endeavors. Gratitude, love, and compassion. Gratitude for the moment, gratitude for every chance, love for yourself, love for mankind, love for the species and nature and everything that is in the world that supports who we are, because we are this world. And being compassionate towards yourself and to others, which is viral and leads towards more compassion towards the efforts and the endeavors of others as well, not just your own. But it spreads. And other people's success is just as gorgeous as yours or mine. We should all be soaking and the mutual gratitude that comes from just living life and being in it. All right. Well, I hope that some of that was helpful. And if not helpful, at least we're a little bit more confused. Because confusion is definitely a seed for curiosity. And on the Gingerbread Man show, curiosity might have killed the cat, but it also makes life a hell of a lot more interesting. And as Socrates said, the unexamined life is not worth living. So stay curious and remember how important it is to consider all the little vague things about what makes you you and how you want to live this life. Now, before we ship off to my son, let's do a couple quotes. I have a couple selections from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, which I'm using a new translation from William Scott Wilson, which you have not heard before on The Gingerbread Man. I'm also going to do a random selection from Ram Dass's Be Here Now, using his book of yoga, the brown pages in the middle. And then I'm going to do some random bit from this dude named Pradeep Apte, who wrote this commentary on the words of a guru named Nisargadatta Maharaj, and it's called the Nisargadatta Gita. And it's a collection of 260 sayings, where he basically just states in 260 ways, I am. And we'll get into it. So first off, let's do Tao Te Ching. Any long-term listeners of the show would know that I'm firmly fond of the Tao Te Ching. I've been reading this book on repeat for almost 2 years now. And we're just going to go to chapter 14. You stare at it fixedly, but do not see it. It is called dim. You listen to it carefully, but do not hear it. It is called indistinct. You touch it, but feel nothing. It is called vague. These three cannot be investigated with clarity, and mixed up like rushing water, act as one. From above it is not clear, from below it is not dark. As continuous as an unending cord, it cannot be named, and returns to no thing. This is called the form of no form, or the shape of no thing. It is called vacant and abstracted. When you approach it, you will not see its head. When you follow it, you will not see its behind. Take tight grasp of the way of antiquity, and you will lead present existence as you would a horse. Being able to understand the ancient beginning with all of your senses is called the beginning thread of the way. So I love it. This kind of shit makes me feel things, but I'm not quite sure how to put it into words. Which the first part of this, it's called dim, it's called indistinct, it's called vague. And it's because it's impossible to even fucking talk about this feeling. But I think what this chapter demands is just investigation through non-action. Not doing and paying attention while not doing. As continuous as an unending cord, it cannot be named and returns to no thing. That's because life and existence, from my vantage point, seems to be eternal. I don't see any way to physically test myself, the beginning of time, or the end of it. And for all I know, my perception of time as it is completely illusionary and subjective. And I could just be a piece of it all, you know, I don't know. So this return to no thing is the beginning of things, because the continuous outgoing, I don't know. I'm tying myself in knots here. Take what you will from the Tao Te Ching. All right. Let's see what Das is going to give us tonight. We're going to do page 77. Where there is faith, there is the presence of the guru. He is it all. He is all your impurities. He is all your corruption. There he is smiling at you through them, saying, and this too. He sees, he understands total compassion. Total compassion means you are the universe. You are all form. You are the breath. You are the river. You are the void. You are the desire to be enlightened. You are the enlightened. That's who he is. That's who, what a guru is. So any concept you can have of any relationship to a guru obviously is a hype. How can you relate to something which is already you and everything you've ever related to or could relate to? How are you going to talk about it? I met him. Who? What? I'm going to go look for the guru. How absurd. You are it. It's really just another cop-out to be searching for the guru. He's your fingernail. Just bite it. Your own fingernail. And you're eating him alive. When you know how to listen, everybody is the guru. Speak to you. It's right here. It always was. Here and now. I'm not going to do that one. Well, anyways, I like that one. So that was a good example of how Das often says, so he had his own guru, which was Baba Neem Karoli, Maharaj or something. So Maharaj means great king. And the holy men were sanctified and they were taken care of in India. But Ram Das would often describe his guru, Baba Neem Karoli, as a non-person. He said that while he was in his presence, it's like nobody was there. He was a perfect mirror and a reflection of Das back on him. And because he was nothing, he had sunk back into the everything. So he knew everything that was always happening because time is illusionary. And so that's how he could be able to do magical acts, is because he was in all places at all time, because he had lost his selfdom as a human. And the only reason that he had chosen to stay on this plane was to help people within this idea of spiritualism, which I'm not saying is true or not. I'm telling you the story. I find it endearing. So Ram Dass eventually stopped going to see his guru because he felt that his guru was always inside him, because he had grown enough to let in that spirit of what lies behind us all come up through him. And so people started calling Ram Dass a guru, and I'm pretty sure he would deny that term, you know, but he was a portal for that which is, and behind all great guru is that entity, that essence. And so I think that's what he was kind of talking about, is you have the guru inside you. You never have to go and meet anybody. You can be inspired by a moment or by a distress or by a struggle, and you can see within yourself this essence that can pick you up and make you the best that you could be, you know, or at least more compassionate and more less pain. You know, we're trying to get rid of suffering. Or at least not get rid of suffering, but process it, you know, process the suffering and transmute it into love and compassion, you know, and that would go through the lack of and the refusal of desire. But I am losing myself. Hinduism is a beautiful spirituality, and I encourage you to look more into it if you would like to. Listen to Ram Dass. He has a podcast, the Ram Dass Here and Now, that's moderated by Raghu Marcus, and he does pretty good. That's hundreds of hours of lectures, but he also has a bunch of shit on YouTube, and he has several books. Be Here Now, Remember, Be Here Now is the one I just read from, is one of the best books that I've ever read in my life. Well, anyways, Nisargadatta Gita. It all basically sounds like the same thing to me over and over again, so I'm just going to read it again. 23. All right, let's go to the beginning, actually, because I think he has this little clarification of what I am. All right, yeah. The I am came first. It's ever-present, ever-available. Refuse all thoughts except I am. Stay there. 2. Just stay put firmly and establish yourself in the I am. reject that all that does not go with I am. 3, consistently and with perseverance, separate the I am from this or that. Just keep in mind that feeling I am. All right, so here's a distinction I would like to make. He's talking about the I am from the thises and the thats. So I am happy. That's a this. I am the gingerbread man. That's a this. I'm a self. That's a this. I'm a being. That's a this. Beingness is the I am-ness. But as soon as you label any aspect of being, that's the that. If that makes any sense. So, 4. Only the I am is certain. It's impersonal. All knowledge stems from it. It's the root. Hold on to it and let all else go. So, as soon as you recognize that you are a self, that's beyond the beingness. You've gone beyond that and you've made it that. But the self is the one who does all the calculations and the measurements. So all knowledge that has been accumulated by humans through reason has been the first initial step in reasoning was considering the I am-ness initially. Recognize the self, then the self does calculations. And then that calculation accumulates and makes a body of knowledge. Yeah. Very murky shit here. 5. You are sure of the I am. It's the totality of being. Remember I am, and it's enough to heal your mind and take you beyond. The I am is, it's ever fresh, all else is inference, and when the I am goes, all that remains is the absolute. So this brought me to think about present-mindedness, because when you recognize beingness without any sort of abstraction, the only way you can do that is in the direct present. And the present moment never leaves you. Every single memory that you have, every little bit of life that you haven't even encountered yet will be facilitated and experienced through the present moment. And this exact spark that is listening to my words right now will experience that. That's the same beingness. Anyways, I just scared the shit out of my cat. Well, I think that was a fantastic show, guys. Thank you so much for joining me. It wouldn't be anything if I didn't have you to talk to. I'm so grateful that you breathe in the mornings and at the nights. I'm grateful that your body does all the bodily processes for you so that you can focus on your other interests and you can work and drive your car. I'm grateful that you don't speed, and I'm grateful that you're not in a hurry right now. I'm grateful that you respect yourself and that you have love for yourself and compassion for yourself. I'm so grateful. Thanks for being here. To end the night, as always, I have my wonderful little boy with you for his segment, Ask O.
Hello, people. It's me and the Gingerbread Man. Aww. Ask O and Gingerbread Man. Sorry.
You did absolutely great, dude. You don't need to apologize, man.
Sorry.
That was awesome.
Sorry.
You're awesome.
Sorry.
So how are you doing this week?
Good.
Tell me a story. Why don't you get off the screen?
I don't have a story.
You don't have a story?
Yes.
Did anything cool happen today?
Yes.
What was that?
Science. Science, though.
Science, dude.
We only have a week to we had to finish. Ow.
What are you doing? All right.
You're tickling me.
I'm not even touching you. Get up, dude. Are you ready for my question?
Yes.
So my question is, how do you feel when you're in a hurry? When you have to rush?
Nothing.
And when you have to go fast?
Nothing.
You don't have any feelings about that?
Mm-hmm.
Is it better to go slow?
Mm-mm.
No?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
I don't know.
Come on, dude. You have opinions.
No, I don't.
Well, are you a fast person?
No.
I think you're a pretty fast person.
Let's see how fast.
Oh, I don't need to see. Oh, geez. You're running around now.
See? I don't go that fast. It's just the middle.
Can I get your voice up?
Yes, I can!
Okay. So, do you make mistakes when you go fast?
Of course!
Yeah?
No.
Never?
Yes.
You never make mistakes when you're going fast?
Yes. Yay.
Well, maybe we should return to this conversation in a couple years. What do you think?
No! Yes!
All right. You want to say bye to everybody?
Bye, everybody who's listening to this story. I have a couple questions for you.
What's that?
When I'm in a rush, last time I fell and down and slipped and did a double flip.
Oh, no. Did that hurt?
No, yes.
It did?
It did a double flip on my head.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Do you have any other questions?
Yes. Today I had a good day, and I can't wait to work on this. I can't wait to doing this science experiment.
That's so cool. I'm excited for you, dude. All right, man. Well, we'll talk to you next week. Say bye, dude. Bye.